So, Kath, what constitutes image-based abuse?
Okay, there's a fantastic report on image-based abuse that was published by Nicola Henry, Anastasia Power, and Asher Flynn at RMIT. And they make it really clear that it's a range of things, and that's actually why the term image-based abuse is being used these days as opposed to revenge porn.
What was wrong with the term revenge porn?
Well, often the pictures are not circulated by someone who perceives some injustice has been done. So, they weren't even in a relationship with the person. And often the images really aren't porn. It can be a range of things from kind of creep shots, upskirts or down tops, pictures on public transport, those kind of non-consensual pictures. Many people with disabilities report being a victim of image-based abuse. There's concern that people who, for example, rely on other people to help them get changed and that kind of thing are victimized by people that they trust to look after them, taking pictures without their consent. It's not just about, there's a kind of stereotypical image of, oh, a silly young kid who was sexting and then they broke up and the picture was shared for revenge, quote unquote. But yeah, there's really significant evidence to suggest that people who are kind of in their teens up to about 29 are at a higher risk. It happens to people at a range of ages, and both men and women can be victims.
So you're saying that a lot of the time these vulnerable members of society, like for example people with a disability, are largely affected by image-based abuse. Who are
Yeah, well,
generally the abusers?
the abusers are more likely to be men. So in the study, and this is a study of people who were interested in doing the research. It wasn't a population-wide study, but the perpetrators were about 54% men, about 33% female, and then there were about 13% where the victim didn't know what gender the abuser was.
And what do you think motivates people to take these actions and post a humiliating or graphic image of somebody online?
Where perpetrators have been interviewed, which they have actually in a small study in the UK, often it's a kind of complete lack of empathy in a sense for the victim. So they're taking the picture to share with a friend because they think it's funny, and they don't necessarily take into account that this is an actual person who will be hurt by that. In some cases, obviously, in some cases, it's done to manipulate a person. So there's a term, sextortion, which basically refers to taking pictures or keeping pictures and not sharing them, but using them as a threat to someone else. Like, if you don't do X or Y, if you leave me, I will share the pictures.
Blackmail.
So a form of abusive blackmail. And then there are times, yes, when it's deliberately done to, for kind of sexual enjoyment for that individual or for others. But there seem to be a range of reasons that people do it, and a fairly significant percentage are just not acknowledging the shame or humiliation or distress it will cause the victim. They're doing it entirely, for the lols, if you
For
like.
the lols. And if we take a step back and look at the external factors that may create a space for people to do these things or perform these actions, do you think that there has been a conflation of what people understand as private and what people understand as public in the age of the internet, in a world where almost everything is documented on social media, smartphones are constantly in our hands, the ability to basically broadcast worldwide is kind of always just a click away. Do you think that a conflation like this contributes to the issue of image-based abuse?
Look, it might to an extent, but most pictures that are discussed in this context, in the kind of criminal setting, are not shared on social media. They're shared more privately. It's easier to more seamlessly share pictures, and certainly, people report that pictures, can be shared very widely to a wide range of people. The idea that, oh, it's, because of the technology, I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case. There's obviously a pre-digital history of
Sure.
hidden cameras and that kind of
Yeah.
thing. So a kind of
Punked.
non-consensual, voyeuristic practice of taking pictures of people, and also kind of surveillance pictures and those kinds of things. And also there's a sense of entitlement in some ways, you know, being able to access material or access actions of people if they are in public. There's not always a sense of, well, publicness has a context in the same way privacy has a context.
True.
And actually, you know, that consent is still relevant in all those different cases.
In public, everything's fair game for the lols, as you said.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's that kind of assumption, but in actual fact, there are, you know, many spaces where people who argue that very strongly are, you know, the first ones to cry defamation or libel or, you know, invasion of privacy if it happens to them. So it's often a very one-sided argument, that argument.
And what do you think of the common misconception that what happens on the internet isn't real, or that a digital action that takes place online doesn't really count, so to speak? Do you think that this is a misconception that might contribute to the image-based abuse epidemic?
I don't have a sense that people think what happens on the internet isn't real. I don't think people are always as conscious as they might be of the ways that images or conversations can be taken out of context in a digital space. And I'm not just talking about images, I'm talking about that whole, you know, but the students who started sledging the author of the Mango poem last week and were very hurt when she dared to take it personally. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, well, personal abuse actually is personal.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter whether you
type
it or say it to someone's face. It still has a personal impact. So, you know, that partly is a kind of effect of anonymity in some cases. So, you know, there has been some research on what's termed disinhibition, that if people feel like they can't be identified as the person who took a picture or shared a picture or made the abusive comment.
And I guess that
they feel more free to make it.
Yeah, and I guess that idea kind of traces back to a pre-internet era as well, with the idea that people who wore masks, I think they did studies a long time ago, that if you were wearing a mask, you felt much more free to release your inhibitions than if you were showing your face.
Yeah, and anonymous, you know, I mean, there's a history of anonymous hate mail and that kind of thing. So I'm always wary of the kind of blanket statement, oh my God, you know, the internet's making us do these things. I think it works both ways. We make the internet do certain things because we want it to do those things. And digital tools also make certain kinds of things easier to do with less forethought and less effort.
And just to end, the West Australian government has identified concerns with legislation, such as in the Victorian laws, where 30% of those charged with image-based abuse were aged 10 to 17 years old. Do you think that there is a particular issue with Gen Z or the Generation Internet, many of whom are still children, that at this age you kind of can't operate with a level of self-awareness or responsibility that perhaps the technology demands of you?
Look, it's probably complex on many levels. I think part of the issue actually is that the subjects of photos who are under 18 can't consent by law to being the subject of that image. So it's not just that it's you know, the picture is shared without consent. You know, just taking a sexual photo of anyone aged under 18 is a crime under Commonwealth law. So there's no space in which consent is possible in that framework. I have some concerns for under-18s that law can be used as a means of prosecuting young people in spaces where actually otherwise the incident might have been consenting. So say, for example, two 16-year-olds who are over the age of consent for actual sex. Also have pictures of each other on their phones. That phone image would be illegal regardless if that kid is perceived as a bad kid, quote unquote, and asked to turn out their pockets and that picture is on their phone. The picture is a crime regardless of whether the sex was consenting. So it's kind of quite a complex area, and I would need to look at each incident case by case to consider what was the context of that. Is that simply an image that was either taken without consent, which many of the images are, or circulated without consent, or is it a space in which the young people were actually in a consenting relationship but the law doesn't make it possible for them to consent?
So there's not really a black and white way that you can frame all of these cases or look at them all under the same...
you would... For under-18s, the laws are quite different, so you can't assume that it's something to do with under-18-year-old psychology, when the law is actually treating them differently, you would need to look at the context of the situation.